Get excited, Whataburger fans. Our one-of-a-kind mushroom Swiss burger is back.
If you love mushrooms, you're going to love this burger.
Two patties, two slices of Swiss cheese, two layers of mushrooms. These mushrooms are beautiful.
It's a really good balance between hearty and savory. And that au jus sauce on top.
The creamy au jus sauce. It really sets it apart.
Just adds flavor that makes you go, wow. It is just absolutely amazing.
It's not just a mushroom Swiss burger. It's a Whataburger mushroom Swiss burger. Here for a limited time. Get excited, Whataburger fans. Our one-of-a-kind mushroom Swiss burger is back.
If you love mushrooms, you're going to love this burger.
Two patties, two slices of Swiss cheese, two layers of mushrooms. These mushrooms are beautiful.
It's a really good balance between hearty and savory. And that au jus sauce on top.
The creamy au jus sauce. It really sets it apart.
Just adds flavor that makes you go, wow. It is just absolutely amazing.
It's not just a mushroom Swiss burger. It's a Whataburger mushroom Swiss burger. Here for a limited time.
All right, folks, welcome back to another great episode of Dr. J Radio Live. I'm your host, of course, Dr. J, broadcasting from the city of angels. Normally, I like to say city of demons these days because it is more towards that way, especially living near Hollyweird. And a big shout out to those in New Orleans, especially listening on 107.7 FM UPRN. And all the affiliates around the world, including the Program Radio Network in the United Kingdom and iHeartMedia, for carrying something that is not mainstream, because I guess you could say we're technically on the fringe, because we're telling the truth, folks, something you don't hear on other places. We're giving you the facts of the world. We talked about everything on this show, every topic, literally from politics to science to UFOs to ghosts to anything paranormal to anything that matters, especially today. What we can do, because you could look at things on a big scale, right? But we all live in a micro scale. So in order to affect something in the macro world, we have to start in the micro world. Now, with that being said, let's talk about today's guest. Today's guest is not just a guest, folks. He is a great friend, a mentor, someone who was there for me when I should have been on the other side, someone who was really right behind me. Yes, he's living on the other side of the continent of the United States, New York City. He's live in Manhattan. But even from there, this guest, and why I keep saying guest as opposed to his name, is that way you find folks have a nice chance to take a look at all the promotion done on social media through the website, Twitter, Facebook, and of course are on YouTube. That's one of the reasons why I schedule the YouTube stream early, so you guys and gals can get into the chat and start talking to each other and of course to me and to the guest. Now I've said the guest multiple times. Let me just reveal who it is. It's Robert Morningstar. Robert, welcome back, dear friend.
Thank you, John. It's always good to be here.
Thank you, brother. Now, we were just talking beforehand on a few of the topics of what to bring up, what to mention throughout the show. And we started with one thing that I was said, you know what, let me move that to the second thing we talk about. This is, instead of macro, I'm going to start with something micro. AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Is she in your district, by the way? New York 14?
She's in the Bronx. She crosses over between the Bronx and Queens. It's a very interesting district that she won through a very interesting process. I'm going to ask you not to call her AOC because I reject that. That's an attempt to equate her to people like JFK, LBJ, RFK, you know, presidents.
Right.
So they're trying to elevate her to that status, and I prefer to call her AO.
You know, the sad thing is, Robert, is when I search Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the very first thing that comes up is also known as AOC. I mean, her Wikipedia says it's not. Remember, Wikipedia, folks, is not you yourself go in there and write your profile. Anybody can write it. So, even her Twitter handle is at AOC. Let's just call it, like you said, OC.
Socialist.
There you go.
She certainly is that and a little bit beyond the socialist. She is a really rank communist.
Now, let's start with this, Robert. Tell me first, and tell everybody who's watching and listening, especially those on YouTube Nation who are interacting, you fine folks, about the scandal involving Miss Cortez.
Well, it turns out that she is a prepackaged candidate. That's basically taking a model off the shelf and prepackaging her as a congresswoman.
Like a Manchurian candidate, sort of, but not quite.
Well, yes, I have somebody who was selected and worked over methodically, prompted, coached, indoctrinated. Justice Democrats is the name of this political action committee that got behind her. But the interesting story is how they found her. They put out a casting call for a film that was to be for the part of a young woman to play a New York City area congresswoman in an independent film. And her brother submitted her name, and she showed up for the casting call, having been a bartender up to that time. And she actually won the role, actually, acting role of congresswoman. They made an independent film about her. So then they took that independent film and took it to the Sundance Festival. And through some kind of arrangement, it managed to win a major award. And it was the first time in the history of Sundance that a totally independent film, first time production, had won it. And that was used as a springboard to then start to promote her as a real candidate. Now, the parallel, history repeats itself. People who are old enough see the pattern enough to recognize it. And we were speaking before the program, and I noted that Congresswoman A.O. has come into her office in the same way that Richard Nixon got to office. Richard Nixon answered an ad in a local newspaper in Southern California that asked for a person who was willing to run for Congress, and the word wasn't exactly nefarious, but willing to perform underhanded deeds, to do it. It's very odd. Look it up. And the person who put it in there was Prescott Bush. So Prescott Bush was the kingmaker in the career of Richard Nixon.
Grandfather of W.
Yes. And father of H.W. So it goes now that the people behind this film and this organization, the PAC, one is an Indian millionaire named Silkat Charbadi, and another one, American named Trent, last name Trent. They are also the chairpersons of the Political Action Committee, Justice Democrats, that sponsored AO to run for the district that was owned basically by Joe Crowley, who was induced into a stupor. I have to say, somehow they induced him into a torpor, a stupor, thinking that, oh, this person's insignificant. I have it in the bag. I don't even have to campaign. And he basically ceded the election. Now, it turns out that during the campaign, they collected $1.8 million in contributions to that PAC to run her. And actually, they shifted $1 million of it under the table, as we say, to her to be dispersed to her operation, which is again, it's the Federal Election Commission rules. It has to do with the time when it happened and how they processed it. But I'd like to speak about her psychological profile. She's a very, very strange bird. Her mannerisms are odd. I'm not surprised. I said that she always gesticulated and acted like a model. Her movements are strange. She's either slouching completely or writhing around in serpentine form and waving her hands and gesticulating. It seems to be something that she and Nancy Pelosi have been practicing something like the body language of that was practiced by Hitler. His gestures and arm movements and expressions were all choreographed, and so much of what she does with her body language is choreography. Actually, she's just dancing there before us. The other thing is her eye contact. She has, according to Chinese physiognomy, which is a science of diagnosis and personality analysis, she exhibits some very, very disturbing eye gestures, expressions. One of them is to glare at a person looking down with eyes glaring up like a wolf about to leap. The other one, when she gets really excited, she gets a bug eye. You see white all around the pupil. And the iris, you see white on all four sides. That's called four-sided white eyes. Or snake eyes, by the way. That's what the Chinese masters call it. And that's a really sign of instability, a propensity to anger and even violence. And so that's bothersome. What comes out of her mouth is even more bothersome. One interesting thing I came across, she started wailing on Twitter, complaining that the media was invading her private space.
Robert, someone has a question here or a comment. Yeah. His name is Ken Wood. He says he checked IMDb and he says he did not see any movie that was entered into Sundance. Can you explain to Ken Wood where you could find this?
Yes, you can find it in several news articles that came out over the weekend. At this time, I'm going to go on because I'm not going to go looking for the websites, but you do the search, you'll find the articles. It's been repeated. You may find it in The Hill and several such publications that carry and share that kind of news. So let me go on.
Yes.
The most disturbing thing, she started complaining about this invasion of her private space because an English newspaper had published an interview with her mother. The problem was that her mother had volunteered for the interview, so there was nothing to complain about. But during the interview, the mother said that she wanted her to get married. And AO is 29, and she not only doesn't want to get married, she has shown me that she is anti-motherhood. She has called for people to stop having children.
Yes, she has.
And this is a syndrome, right? This thing about women turning against motherhood. Basically, she is against motherhood. She won't get married. She doesn't want to have children. She doesn't want you or your spawn to have children. She thinks the world will end in 12 years. She has a very pessimistic view of reality and the future. And as I say, to think is to create. Imagination becomes reality. An old Tai Chi master is saying.
That's for quantum physics right there. Thoughts become reality.
Well, that's right. And she puts out a very, very anxious vibration. She's very sharp, though, I have to say, in her demeanor during the Michael Cohen investigation or testimony. But you could see that every question she presented to Cohen had been very, very well scripted by some smart lawyers. So it's going to be an interesting campaign. Actually, I'm not unhappy with the situation. This is what the Constitution envisioned, you know, to prevent any kind of tyranny from ever taking over. The checks and balances system, you know, having one ideology, I won't say party, having one ideology in charge of the three branches of government, meaning the Congress, the Supreme Court, and the executive, that's a very great danger. And so to have the government having locking horns on itself is really a way that protects the populace and shields us from the consequences of overreach and power grabs, as were done by the Obama administration. I'm sure everyone can remember when we talk about executive orders and overreach. That's a period of time in my life that I'm glad to see gone.
Now, let me ask you about the more macro problem that Cortez, Sanders, and I believe Omar, I mean, you can correct me on that or not, are pushing for what the DSA wants, Democratic Socialists of America. Now, I hesitate to use the word democratic because to use democratic and socialist in the same sentence is sort of saying like Democratic People's Republic of North Korea or Democratic People's Republic of Congo or Democratic Liberia. Anything that has democratic in its name usually is some sort of, I want to say, tyrant or socialism or whatever you want to call it. That's usually what it tends to say if it has the name in it, democratic. That's why when now we refer to the left, I like to say dem, not democratic, just dem, D-E-M.
Well, I think that they shuffled off an outer shell, a pretension of being democratic, but they were exposed during the last campaign to have re-engineered the Democratic Party into a really USSR style of Politburo-run internal one-party politics. And that's what we saw with the defeat of Bernie Sanders. We saw Bernie Sanders put up a fantastic campaign, but he was up against a stacked deck. And I'll tell you how it was done. When the Clintons took over the presidency and they took over the Democratic Party, they re-engineered it. They put in a category of electors through the convention that they called superdelegates. Now, these superdelegates were people that they got to choose and were primarily already elected Democrat politicians. For example, state governors, congresspeople, mayors of major cities. And there were lots that they could actually delegate as nominees. I think the total was about 540. So before Bernie Sanders could even compete with Hillary Clinton, because they all had been sworn to support Clinton, so before Bernie Sanders could even compete with Hillary Clinton, he had to win 540 votes in the primary. So now where did they get this idea? I'll tell you where they got it. They got it from Lenin, Stalin, Trotsky. When the Soviet Union spawned and spread out and took over several domains, they tried to run it from a central leadership headquarters in Moscow. But communications were so slow that they couldn't communicate quickly enough with the different capitals of the different socialist republics that they had spawned through revolution. So they got the bright idea that they were going to have representatives. They were going to appoint representatives to represent each of the socialist republics and hold their committee meetings in Moscow. And this was called the Politburo. So the Politburo began to make decisions for everybody else in the name of everybody else when everybody else didn't know what the hell they were voting for. And they were just being rubber stamps for Lenin's Trotsky. So that's how they communized, Sovietized the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party of today, in its structure, in its ideology, is as far away from John F. Kennedy's concept of the Democratic Party as Republicans are. I also remind you that after the Kennedy assassination, many former Democrats, many Democrats became former Democrats and became Republicans. There was a huge shift among the many celebrities who saw what had happened, the mob marriage with the CIA, the mob takeover of politics, the infusion of mafia money into controlled politicians, and you know, a lot of people bailed out. Even the man who was in the limousine with President Kennedy and was shot in the assassination attempt,
the governor.
He became a Republican. Charlton Heston became a Republican. Ronald Reagan became a Republican. If John F. Kennedy were alive today, he'd be a Republican.
You know,
that's how far they would have strayed. No one can argue with me that President Kennedy and Robert Kennedy would stand in the same room with people who support late-term abortion, dismemberment of a late-term fetus, and even the suffocation or the exposure of an already born fetus, which is called a baby. You know, once it's out of the womb, and it's alive.
And
it's a baby.
Of course, the umbilical cord cut.
And it's called infanticide. It's murder of a child. And President Kennedy would never condone such things.
Ken Wood has another question here. He says, what do you think of the viral video of, since you don't want me to use those initials, I'll say just Cortez, exposing the way about corporation buying elections?
Well, it's not completely false. I think that corporations do try to buy elections, and sometimes they are successful. One unsuccessful anecdote that I'd like to point out is that last election, Google was staunchly against Donald Trump, and they organized a voter ride to the polls, buses, and they organized this nationwide to get people to the polls to vote. And they took everyone to the polls, and they took them back, and they surveyed them all. And the majority of the people that they had transported to the polls had gone for Trump, which was, I thought that was rich. The other part, look at I'm talking about the corporations. They can buy politicians, they can buy elections, but they can also lose their pants by getting involved in politics. And the prime example is the current independent presidential candidate, the former president of the coffee shop, Starbucks. I won't mention his name. I'm not going to give him a plug. You know who he is, the president of Starbucks. And I gave him hell along with a lot of other people because he came out openly for Hillary Clinton before the campaign. And when he did that, his staff started to target Trump people and for harassment. I went through it, and they recognized me as a not Hillary Clinton voter. I wasn't wearing a MAGA hat or anything, but I certainly don't look like the kind of guy that would have a Hillary. Maybe the absence of the Hillary pin in my district. So, you know, I said, I'd like that banana bread. He says, we don't have any more of that. I said, okay, then I'll take that marble cake over there. He says, we don't have any more of that. And I'm looking at it. And he said, I can't sell you those because they're displays. And then I pointed to a third one. He says, let me go in the back and see if we have any more of that. And then he comes back with a big smile. He says, oh, man, it's just not your day. We don't have any of that either. And I walked out. I said, nice, nice gag, right? So I wrote up on Facebook, and I said, I'm not going to Starbucks anymore, and I think people should object to corporations trying to influence you to vote for their presidential candidate. And the whole movement, I mean, a lot of people had the idea at the same time, I'm sure. But in the end, they lost $164 million. And he was forced to resign later over an issue that involved a racial incident when two people, two African-Americans, were sitting in a Starbucks shop and not buying anything. The manager called the cops and threw them out, and they went below. You must remember it. As we say, in New York, they went through a big stink over it, and he resigned. But now he's running for president, and I encourage him to run. I think he's learned his lesson. I think he's afraid of AO. That's basically it. You know, he's a self-made billionaire. He said something that really struck me. He said, I wasn't born rich. I grew up in the city. I lived in the projects. And when he said that, I lived in the projects, I was taken back to my own childhood, as you know, which was over there in the Hell's Kitchen in the West Side. And I remember looking across, the city got into many programs, urban programs for housing. And the projects was these big complexes of red brick buildings that were basically a step up in social mobility, which is something that we'll talk about later, about social mobility and socialism and the non-existence of it. So
let me ask you this, Robert. If it's totally up to you, do you want to engage with the people who are writing questions and comments?
Sure.
Okay. Because
if I don't know the answer, I'll just say I don't know, because I don't BS. But
Ken Wood is also saying, do you know that they've taken over our government? I'm going to say, Ken, if you could please reword that question, that would be better. That way I could ask it. Timothy Hawkins says,
Hold on. I like the question. It's a generic question. And almost anything, I mean, it really strikes many chords. Do you think they have taken over the government? Yes, I have. The question is, who is they? Okay. I refer to the John F. Kennedy assassination. I refer to the takeover of the government after the JFK assassination, the takeover and metamorphosis of the Democratic Party. Yes, an evil force took over the reins of government unconstitutionally at the time of the assassination of President Kennedy. That same evil continued to spread and spawn and murdered Martin Luther King and Robert F. Kennedy. It tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan, which shows you where Ronald Reagan really stands in regard to these men. All stood for the same thing, American values. And yes, they. Now, who is they? Okay. I can give you the players. Okay. The players are the mechanics of the coup d'etat, right? The departments, the CIA, without a doubt, we now have the documents. The CIA and its assassination arm, which was part and parcel of something called the 5412 Committee in the Executive Action Committee, orchestrated the assassination of the president using an out-of-country headquarters, which was in Madrid, Spain, using an assassination apparatus that had already been installed for 10 years prior, since 10 years prior, by Otto Skorzeny, the top German Nazi commando and SS officer. He was recruited along with paperclip Nazis into the CIA, and he worked from Europe and from Madrid. Otto Skorzeny directed the assassinations of many political opponents in Europe, in post-war Europe, and then set up a network within the United States that spanned from Florida to Texas. So the network of assassins that were marshaled to go into Dallas and kill President Kennedy, that network had already been operating for 10 years under the direction of Otto Skorzeny. That points to a higher intelligence. Let me say this. 2.5 years ago, at the end of the Obama administration, the Iranian regime, the Iranian government, claimed that the United States government has made an alliance with extraterrestrials and that they were in league with Nazis, who had also been involved in this human ET alliance, and that an alien intelligence was directing American foreign policy.
You know, let me say,
I don't think that's too far from the truth. I don't think that's too far from the truth, especially if you consider that artificial intelligence is an alien intelligence and it has been implemented, and much of the operations that are going on right now are beyond human control. It's something that I've been warning the public about for the last 7 or 8 years regarding a film called Colossus, the Forbin Project, that was made in 1970, warning of the takeover of the world by two supercomputers. And Google may be one of those monstrosities, still in evolution, but still expanding its artificial intelligence tentacles everywhere.
Now, because these questions are going back before we got onto AI and extraterrestrials, I'm just going to go in the list so that way each person has a chance to have a direct contact with you since the phone line is down. So Lars Saturn asks, just says Luciferian philosophy with a question mark. What do you got to say about that?
Absolutely. You hit the nail right on the head, and don't be afraid to say the word. They have revealed their true spiritual identity, and by they I mean the Democrats under Clinton and now with AO and Pelosi. They have a playbook, and the playbook reveals their deity. The playbook is called Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, and the prologue is a dedication, and it's dedicated to Lucifer himself, whom they designate the first rebel. Now, when you go into the book, you start to read that, you start to understand that it is a book for seeding chaos, for planting obstruction, for planting dissent, dissatisfaction, to use as tools to organize political groups to chant in mantras. And we've seen all of these events take place. It's a methodology for creating chaos and disruption and division. It's diabolical, and that is the true word. It's something that is intended to split everything apart. So now, yes, it's Luciferic.
Here is Kenwood's other question. Corporations have taken over both parties. So if AO is the only politician exposing the corruption, why are you disparaging her?
She's not the only person exposing the corruption. President Trump exposed the corruption during the campaign repeatedly, and he's trying to rein in the corruption. I disparage her because I don't trust her. I think she speaks a lot of gibberish. I feel that she is unstable and hysterically vain.
A lot of people recognize the fact that she's only 29. Even my own doctor, we were talking about this recently, that he says, I fear that she's going to be here forever. And others say, look, she's in Congress. If she's like this now, she can be voted out by, I don't want to use the word harass because that's not the proper word, by scaring other people in the left that it's gone a little too far left at the time. But yet,
John, if I may backtrack a moment, if I may.
Sure.
Going back to the question about the article, about the film and the Sundance, if you go to my Facebook page, the article is there. You have to scroll down. My Facebook page is robertmorningstar.12. In the, if you want to fill in facebook.com/robertmorningstar.12, or look for the one with the icon of a dolphin. I use the head of a dolphin as my icon. The article is there. Scroll down. There are a lot of articles. And scroll down, scroll down. You'll find one about, they call it AOC's financial scandal. That's where you'll find it. Okay. So we go on.
Now, like I said, she's only 29.
Yeah, that's old.
What if she's going to still be involved in politics for the rest of her life? Or do you think that this is just what you think versus what, you know, who can see the future, right? Will, in your own terms, in your own mind, do you think that she has a chance of being voted out in 2020? Or will she be elevated into the Senate and at some point maybe vice president or maybe even run for POTUS?
Well, I think that's her fantasy. To turn 35 and to run for president, but before she gets there, there's a lot of other people in the way. And what is going on now, as I predicted, John, you and I have done programs in the past few months, I believe, and I predicted that what she represented, along with Omar and Tlaib, and several other commune Islamic supporters in the Congress, because that's what actually has happened. There's been an amalgamation of communism and Islam in as a faction in there. And Omar and Tlaib and Cortez are the three sisters in that movement. Now, the DNC chairmanship was taken over by the same ideology at the end of the last election, when they elected Tom Perez, he chose to have a co-chairman who was Keith Ellison, you know, the scandal-clad attorney general now of in Minnesota, from which he was a congressman prior to that. So they have merged a pro-Islamic, pro-Sharia law, pro-abortion, pro-infanticide ideology to amalgamate their power base. And I don't approve of it. I don't trust her. I don't think she's reliable. Unstable is my word for it. Someone to be wary of. The woman is against motherhood.
Cows too.
Cows, but let's not be facetious. This is serious. We're talking about something, a syndrome actually, that I have seen now spread. And to me, it's proven that leftist, feminist women have suffocated the maternal instinct. It has been extinguished. Leftist, let me just say it more simply, feminism has killed femininity. And the defining quality of femininity is it's the instinct and the purpose called motherhood. And this has been completely subverted. Women of that ideology are loathed to think of pregnancy and bringing to term a child. They've been indoctrinated and practically speaking, mind controlled into a dreadful fear of delivery, parturition, and motherhood. I think that's a complete perversion of human nature, if you ask me. Anyone who can rationalize the murder of a baby a day after and still call it abortion and still call it the will of the mother, I think there's a perversion. The other thing that bothers me, and it's even worse, Dr. J and folks, it's even worse than you think, because I fear that these states that have passed these laws condoning the murder of children even after they're born, the dismemberment of infants while in the womb, piece by piece, that this is becoming the basis of a vast organ harvesting industry that is buying and selling baby parts, as has been proven by the exposure of the Planned Parenthood by James Fox 2 years ago, the secret camera. No one can argue with that. There is a huge multi-billion-dollar industry in stem cells and organs. And I fear that this is the devil's work. A friend asked me if I thought it was luciferic. I don't think anything could be more luciferic and anti-human than what we're discussing right now. As a matter of fact, if you scroll down my Facebook page, you'll come to the article that the greatest cause of death on planet Earth last year were 42 million abortions.
Wow. Alan A. Nakamura, aloha, Alan, and thank you for being my first Patreon patron, has a question. What does Robert think of the recent video done by YouTube, Mr. Reagan, on AO by the Justice Democrats?
Well, I think it's an accurate portrayal of what we're talking about. I think that he has had the same insight and has presented it in a less vocal way, a visual way. Yes, I think he's giving you an accurate picture of it.
Now, going back to what you said earlier, 42 million deaths last year. So you're talking about global, or you're talking about 42 million? Okay. Global. That is higher than homicide. I'm talking about, because this is a form of homicide, I'm talking about actual homicide as an adult, stabbing each other, killing each other, etc.
Yeah. It's a single cause. You know, car accidents, plane crashes, poisoning, suicide, murder. This is what, again, scroll down my Facebook page. My Facebook page is not a bunch of selfies. It's actually my news stream, which I keep going, rolling on with articles that I think are intelligent, important, pertinent, entertaining, humorous, you know, like a newspaper should be. So, So now let's go on to... All right. The subject is people are waking up. The world is waking up. Okay. So we have yellow vest protests in France, weekend revolutions. The French really know how to do a revolution, you know, work for five.
That's true.
Okay. But they're still driving the agenda, and it's good. You know what it is? They have awakened to the tyranny of European socialist republics. The European Union is the USSR of today, and the encroachment on human liberty and human self-expression, the enforcement of mass migration has reached the critical point, you might say critical mass, and people who have been cowed into silence for decades have finally had enough and are taking pride in their national identity and their ethnicity. Pardon the noise.
Yeah, we got some background noise from you.
That's the sounds of New York City news, real and live from Manhattan, the Mid-Island. So that's happening. Then, of course, we see the debacle in Venezuela, which we touched upon before. Name me one country where socialism has produced happiness.
You know, it's ironic that Bernie Sanders says Denmark Norway, is not a socialist, but they're not socialists. They're capitalists.
Their leaders came out. He said, he's wrong. We're not a socialist. We have social program and a vast social network, but we are not socialists. So again, it's that deceptive language, the forked tongue language of democratic demagoguery. It's really sad that Americans have been reduced to babble. Few people really have a deep understanding of the internal structure, the logical sequences that are necessary to have a valid debate. They argue with emotion, they use rhetoric and deflection, and various forms of deception in oratory. It's hard to have a one-to-one conversation and directness such as you and I are having. Look at how often, for example, on Tucker Carlson, he'll ask the question, and the guy or the gal starts blabbing, and he said, "Come on, answer the question. That's not what I asked you. Answer the question." You hear that over and over, because these people have become very adroit at evasion. And people who are listening and cognizant should be aware that evasion is part of deception. So
now, socialism and communism is the best on paper, but implementing it is a whole other deal. It failed with Germany. It failed with Soviet Union. It's failing with Venezuela. Like you asked, is there any place it's not failing? Some people like Bernie said that Fidel Castro is a genius. He got a lot of slack for that when he was in Florida. And of course, then he went to correct himself, said that his point, even though people had died in Cuba, that the programs instituted were proper. Again, a lot of people in the DNC pushed him back. And I think he might essentially be screwed, because the DNC sort of changed the rules last time, where even though he was an independent, he ran as a Democrat. But didn't they make some amendments to – I'm talking about that you can't make an amendment in the Constitution, because, you know, that doesn't control the entire country. I'm talking about they changed something within the DNC to make it to where a non-Democrat cannot run within them. Right. So if they're an independent, they don't get the money.
Right, right. I wanted to say, let me ask you this question. What was the difference – what were the two worst – ideologies of the 20th century?
And two worst ideologies?
Yeah, what killed more people in the 20th century? Two ideologies killed more people than anything else.
Socialism, Nazi Germany, 1940.
Nazi Germany.
38 to 45, right?
Right.
Imperialism.
And
communism.
Communism. Okay, so. What's the difference between Stalin and Hitler?
None, really.
Let me put it, what's the difference between Hitler and Stalin? The difference is this. Hitler promoted national socialism, and Stalin promoted international socialism, a.k.a. communism. There's no difference. It's just their approach to the implementation of the tyranny. And it is the same, as I repeatedly say, it's the same old snake. It molts its skin. It comes out with a new pattern, a new label, but it's still the same old snake. And it has caused more misery. And it has manipulated mankind in the worst ways. One of the examples I gave you is how feminism, which originated in the Soviet Union, right?
Interesting. I didn't know that.
You know, yes, of course. The first thing that communism has to do and socialism has to do to take over your life and disrupt it is to destroy the nuclear family. And when socialism and communism in particular come in, they start to take over oversight of your medical condition. Your children are indoctrinated that they belong to the state, that they don't belong to the parent. If the parent deviates from state ideology, the children are taught to turn the parents in. The woman is separated from her child in order to break the mother and child bond, so that the child is then bonded to the state. And the educational policies of America and the Soviet Union were radically different in the 20th century. We produced individuals, they produced hive minds. And the way that this was achieved was by employing the educational theories of a man named Vygotsky, V-I-G-O-T-S-K-Y, Vygotsky, I believe Leon Vygotsky. This guy said that the child should be indoctrinated while he is developing So the indoctrination and the ideology becomes part of their nervous system. While in the West, developmental psychologists like Piaget, Jean Piaget, and Dr. Benjamin Zuse were saying, no, you have to let the child, the organism, develop first, and then you educate it. So you get the difference? What we would create was a fully developed child ready to receive education with an individual identity of its own, and then its mind like a sponge ready to receive and absorb the knowledge and be selective of that knowledge. Whereas Vygotsky's method said that the environment was to be used to create this collective mindset. And basically that came to the United States around 1978. It was taken over by the New York Teachers Union and very subtly began to be applied in New York City school systems. And from there, it branched out and reached other school systems and evolved over time into what is called the Common Core Curriculum, Communist Core Curriculum. So that's how the children were alienated. And that's a very good word, because I feel kids are very alien in mindset and emotional makeup these days. And it's a product of this constant, first the educational system, then the reinforcement of those attitudes and a bombardment of media blitz, like the adverts in the old Max Headroom TV show.
You know how you mentioned that right now this Europe is the new Soviet Union? Well, the way I've always looked at it is that it's not the U.S., the new Soviet Union. It's actually the Fourth Reich. Hitler could not control the world through military standards, so why not use financial instruments to control the world? If you look at how much debt is owed to Berlin, then you might want people start to think that maybe the Fourth Reich does live on.
Well, that's without a doubt. There's the Fourth Reich. You can split it. Until recently, it was one Fourth Reich, which was the American deep state. You know, that going back to my friend who asked, the Luciferic. Yeah, Luciferic, deep state, CIA, skull and bones, all of that. All in a bundle, in all in one diabolical package that had created an octopus with tentacles of power all around the globe. And Europe was a big part of it until the election of Donald Trump and the disruption of the concept of the New World Order and the severance of American support for NATO and the call for them to start paying their fair share of their defense. That is a huge disruption. And so now I would agree with you that there's a European Fourth Reich and that we are demolishing the American deep state Fourth Reich that took over when President Kennedy was assassinated and followed up by Martin Luther King, Robert F. Kennedy, John Lennon, Ronald Reagan, the Pope, the list goes on. You can see I have studied assassination history. We could go back to the King of Yugoslavia in Marseille in 1934.
Well, when was that? In 34, you said?
Yes, I believe.
Because even before that, you have the assassination of, and you can remember the name that kicked off World War One, Francis Ferdinand.
And his wife, Sophie. Yeah, that's a very bizarre story. The Black Hand, see? The Black Hand has been operating since time immemorial. I mean, it goes back to medieval times. And the Black Hand was the secret Masonic political organization to which the assassin, Princeps, Gavrilo Princeps, belonged. And that is the same network that we're talking about now. It just, as I said, the same serpent, and it is, Masonism and Masonry in essence, ultimately, is also very communistic and New World Orderly. The Illuminati, what do they worship? They worship power. They worship light. What do they say? Light bearer, more than likely.
Isn't that right there sort of an axiom? How can you worship the light and power at the same time?
Oh, well, it's full of paradoxes. You know, it's very much like Buddhism. Buddhism tries to help you arrive at enlightenment by cracking your mind like you could crack a walnut, in a sense. And what they use are ideas called koans, paradoxes, koans. A Buddhist monk in Japan, maybe put into a room and told to contemplate, what is mu? You just contemplate mu. What is mu? And you contemplate that forever. It's guaranteed to spark a light and arrive at enlightenment. Try to think of a stick with no end, either end, infinite. Just think about that for a while. Try to think about the sound of one hand clapping. So these paradoxes are used in that kind of training. Meditation is a form of mind control and absorption of a doctrine. Right. Think about the Hare Krishnas. Who were the others? They weren't Hare Krishnas, but they had something called Premis. You know, they worshipped this little guru, a young. In the 70s, these Indian gurus were coming out of India, and everybody was thinking, oh, well, that's the Messiah. Oop, that's the, what's the name? Maitreya. Everybody's waiting for Maitreya. And you have to be your own Maitreya. That's what I say. Yeah. Become. Become your ideal. Keep striving. Don't project your hopes onto others.
So let's talk about hope then. Where can we find hope, Robert, to get people, you know, well, like you said, the world is waking up.
You find it in yourself and you dig in. And despite whatever life presents to you, you have to keep affirming that you are happy to be in this body, no matter how difficult the travails, and keep reaffirming your first your love of life and then your faith in life. That's what I do. I've just gone through two hell weeks, you know, due to my exuberance in practicing Tai Chi sports. I sprained my back 2 weeks ago. Fortunately, I have the knowledge and the instruments to put my back in place and put it 3 days and 4 days back in fashion. Things that would take someone else to the hospital. And then I overplayed in the cold last week and got a bit of frostbite on my hands. And that was pretty terrible. It burns, so it burns like hell. Fortunately, I know enough about solutions to have recuperated for this show. I couldn't type for about 3 days. It was hypersensitive.
Robert, we have another question. And like I said, the chat is really active if you want to check out the link. And please do check the message I did send you. Now, Paranormal Activity and Mysterious Stories says, what do you think about income inequality in a system that allows a handful of individuals to amass huge fortunes while many struggle just to get by?
I think each of us Americans has had the opportunity to educate ourselves, to advance ourselves. And I think that some people lost faith in themselves. And for whatever reason, and then in compensation, try to put the blame on others. That primarily the reason for failure is an individual failure, not a system that's engaged in oppressing people. I don't believe that. I believe, for example, that African Americans and Latin Americans in America are better off than anywhere else on the planet and better off than any time in history. And that this great dissatisfaction and so-called wealth disparity is due to a lack of motivation more than a conspiracy against the working man. Again, when I fail, and I have failed many times, but I have picked myself up and tried to succeed again, and succeeded again, and failed again, I never blamed anybody else. You know? I'm not looking for, what are they calling it, reparations. That's a ludicrous idea. Giving money to someone today is not compensating the person that was part of a different economic system 200 years ago. I think that's, again, Marxism. Again, a way of planting dissension and dissatisfaction amongst us. I think that the African-American population has responded wonderfully to President Trump's call. And as, again, labor figures reveal that more African Americans are working today than ever before, and that much of the dissatisfaction that people are talking about and being spotlighted, primarily magnified by mass media hysteria. There was a wonderful, did anybody see this? No, obviously not. There was a wonderful dinner in the White House for Black History Month. And it was mobbed with about 500 Black leaders at the invitation of President Trump.
I did and see that, yes.
The only station that showed it was Fox News. And Laura,
and One American Laura, News Network, OANN.
Yeah, and Laura Ingraham had two of the people who attended. And there was this fellow from St. Louis that was so charged up. He was such a street guy, you know, a street boy, with the street boy gesticulations and gestures. He was in euphoria that he had heard President Trump. And so that's the reality. The media is hiding from you, from us, the love that many African Americans do feel for President Trump. They feel validated. They feel supported. What are those two Black ladies, the African-American ladies who are his greatest defenders? Diamond and Silk?
Oh, Diamond and Silk. Yes, yes. Great gals. Wow. Actually, they agreed to come on for a 15-minute interview. So when I get them, folks, please be ready.
That's great. That's really great. Well, I think that people who like them, who have that positive attitude, look at them. All they did was during the campaign, they came out with one video to defend Donald Trump because they felt that he was unfairly being charged with racism. Sound familiar? It's 2 years later and we're still going through that malarkey. And then, so they do this one beautiful and sincere defense of President Trump, and boom. Boom is when you hit the diving board, it goes boom, and the springboard sends you sailing, and they are wonderful successes, great American success stories. So,
and every month, at least once a month, you see them in the Oval with the president with a new picture. They are the only non-mainstream media that Trump covers. And let me ask you this, Robert, because a lot of people need to understand this. You have mainstream media, you non-cable stations. Let's talk about ABC, NBC, CBS, just those three networks for the moment. 90% of what they spoke about the president has been negative. But half the country voted for him. Sure, he lost the popular vote by a small margin. But what about the 50 million people who voted for him? Is that accurately reflected by those three networks? It doesn't sound like that to me.
Nope. No, they have a grudge. I mean, they are all hatchet men. And, you know, it's interesting to see the metamorphosis of their faces and their bodies. You know, the anchors over the 2-year period where they have been forced to spew vitriol and anger and hatred and ridicule and disinformation every single minute of every single day at Donald Trump. Their faces have changed. They've aged. Breonna Keeler gained about 30 pounds. It's a very interesting thing, the stress. The stress of daily lying has an effect on your brain, and the effect of on the brain has effects on your body. One of the principles of Tai Chi is the shape of your mind. The shape of your body is reflected in the shape of your mind. So if you change your mind, you change your body. Now, if you're wallowing in hatred, negative emotions, and vitriol, you're cooking up acid, you know, figuratively speaking, you know, a boiling vat of acid in your solar plexus or wherever you feel your feelings. Some people feel them more deeply in the body, in the gut, in the bowels. So if that's where you put your anger and your hatred, you're only creating a wonderful environment for illness. One has to overcome one's negative emotions. Hatred and anger I associate with satanic impulses. And we all have them. We all have them. We have a soul which is light and dark, yin and yang. The Chinese call it Gui and Bo, and the Egyptians call it Ka and Ba. How similar the sound, Ka, Ba, Gui, Bo. The Chinese said that these two are components of something called the Hun, soul. So think of an egg and the yolk and the fluid, and that these are antagonistic. And one is Christ, one is Satan, one is angel, one is devil, one is good, one is bad. And ever wrestling in your bosom, in your heart, in your gut, in your bowels for dominion over you, your body, your impulses, your direction. And I say that we each have to wrestle with both of them, right? One can be totally become overcome by the Holy Spirit and just evaporate to the realities of life and become a God intoxicant, as they call them in India. Or one can just go to the depths of evil, into the darkness, into the underworld, and be consumed by satanic impulses. And Satan is the worst enemy of the human soul. Satan is the devourer of souls. And now you don't think about Satan devouring your soul. Don't think about, you know, some giant monster coming from outside and gobbling you up. The Satan that eats your soul is the one who eats you from within. That's the one you have to overcome. And that, wrestling with yourself, is very much like trying to be a lion tamer. Get into a cage with a lion. You're either going to tame it or it's going to eat you. And I think that that's a good metaphor for the spiritual wrestling match that is life. If you believe in a spiritual basis of life. It's also the steam, you know, that dynamic, that opposition, that tension between those two forces is also part of the steam of life and the magnetism that holds us rooted in this carnal envelope. You know, I do believe, I've had many, many experiences, consciousness experiences during my life. And one of them was when I had an ultrasonic videotaping of my entire body, and they went with it, and I could see it on the screen. And when they came in over my liver, I swear my liver looked to me like the head of an alien. And I said to myself, oh my God, could it be that I'm really this alien entity and I'm wearing this body like a scuba diving suit? You know, and that's not a new feeling, because I had it when I was 12. I had a surgery, minor. Well, they opened me up pretty clearly, about 5 inches in my lower abdomen. And then they had to open me up again to clean out the wound because it was, swollen with coagulated blood. So they came in and they opened me up, and whoop, And there I look. I'm looking into my body, and what do I see? I saw beef steak. And I look, and I'm 12 years old, right? And I had this higher level of consciousness instantly that I realized that my body is a robot made of beef steak. But I'm not that meat. I'm something that's inside it, because when they parted me open, the doctor put his fingers in, and I could feel me in the space between the parted flesh. I could feel me. I was feeling my spirit body. And from that time till now, I have felt my spirit body, which is my soul, and my carnal body. And I wear my carnal body like a diver wears a diving suit, or an astronaut wears a spacesuit. And I respect it. I love it. I take care of it, but it's not me.
No, Robert, this is completely from, I mean, forget about left field, not even the same ballpark. We're not even talking about the same sport right now, okay? This is how far this is coming from. We're talking about wearing. What about men in black who wear human skin to do what they need to do? And I know this, like I said, this is coming out of left field.
Yeah, I've heard of this.
But I just wanted to hit you with it because someone's asking me about, since we're talking about wearing skin, what about men in black who wear skin?
Yes, I have heard reports more than once, several times, of these very menacing and nefarious beings. I wonder if they are human under the human face skin.
The theory is that they're not. The theory is they're non-terrestrial and that they're wearing dead man's skin. That's why they're cold to the touch. They don't have hair. They don't have eyebrows, things that would normally fall off after you pass away.
Yeah. I think that's a particular race of extraterrestrials that operates and may be operating in concert with Defense Intelligence Security Command. You know that acronym? There is a secret security department that's not governmental.
DISS, you said?
DISC.
DISC, D-I-S, interesting.
If you read something called the Torbit document, it's readily available now. It's a very rare document in the 1970s when I first learned of it and read it. Written by a very highly connected Texas lawyer in the 1970s, revealing the truth about the John F. Kennedy assassination. And it's called the Torbit document, T-O-R-B-I-T-T document. And if you type that in and type PDF afterwards, I'm sure you'll find it. And this reveals the existence of this security apparatus that is non-governmental, that is in charge of controlling all information regarding UFOs and aliens. And it also reveals that the way the U.S. government got out of the responsibility for UFOs was to create a fake scientific commission called the Condon Committee, very much exactly like, I would say, exactly
Colorado,
like,
yeah.
Like the Warren Commission, you see. Warren Commission, Condon Commission, same methodology, same purpose, same outcome, right?
And Edward Condon, even before the Condon report was supposed to be released, he was quoted, and maybe you might know where this was quoted, but he said that he basically told the conclusion that extraterrestrials don't exist. There's nothing to UFOs. And he says, but I'm not supposed to give this conclusion yet, I guess, from the funding or for whatever it was. Maybe you can tell more about that.
That was revealed in a letter that was leaked by a Professor Lowe. When that letter was leaked, it indicated that they had this premeditated conclusion, and that even though they presented 1,000 cases, of which 800 were unexplained, they still came to the conclusion that there was no threat to national security from UFOs, and that they basically don't exist, that the majority are misperceptions or misinterpretation of natural phenomena. And then at the same time in the book, if you have it, if you've read it, they list 700 cases of the most unusual UFOs, including photographs. So, newspeak. Government newspeak. Forked tongue propaganda.
Okay, here's another question for you. This comes from Paranormal Activity and Mysterious Stories. Does Robert believe in Sitchin's theory as told by the Sumerians that Homo sapiens were created by the Anunnaki, or does he believe in the fairy tale of evolution? Very good one. And we got another one after that.
That's a good question, and I believe in both. I do believe that the Anunnaki actually did engineer a Homo sapien. They probably engineered proto-hominid too. See, so because there are stages in the telling of that story. Interestingly enough, I just received as a gift from my dear friend David Pfaff a remarkable book called The Shining Ones. It was published in the 1970s, and I believe it is the definitive telling of this Anunnaki's legend. I won't call it a myth. I will call it a legend, because legends have more basis in fact than myths, as we think about them, even though myths are real. That's a paradox right there. So, yes, I believe the Anunnaki did create the human races, plural, and that there was intervention and genetic engineering in the fashioning of what has come to be modern man, and that there, and of course, there are two strains. There is one matrilineal line, which we all seem to associate the majority of human race with the Lucy mitochondrial DNA, or the primordial African Eve. But then, in recent years, since 2010 in Siberia, they have found another matrilineal line called the Denisovans. Previously called Woman X. They found a joint from a pinky finger, a molar, and they found a couple of assays, and they concluded that this DNA did not belong to the normal human genome. It did not have the mitochondrial DNA of the African Eve. It had something else, the Denisovan woman.
Now,
and so
I was just going to say, we have four more questions after that. We got 25 minutes. So,
okay, proceed. So let's go on to the next question if that wasn't enough of an answer.
Okay. And by all means, Paranormal Activity and Mysterious Stories, if you have more and you want to ask, by all means, please do. That's what this is all for. I'm for you, the listeners and viewers, to participate and to interact with the guest. And so now,
let me hear the question again.
Does Robert believe in Sitchin's theory as told by the Sumerians that Homo sapiens were created by the Anunnaki, or does he believe in the fairy tale of evolution?
Yes, I did leave something out. I believe that there were two factions of Anunnaki. We know this from the story of Enki and Enlil, and that there was sabotage, that the Adam and Eve, the Adamu and Eve were in the garden, but one of the gods had one plan, you know, Yahweh, gonna live here forever, happily, merrily after, immortal with me, you know, I love it. I don't trust that story anymore. I wanted to say this in the context of the Anunnaki tale. It's obvious that humanity was being engineered for a slave purpose. It was to mine gold. And the first generation of Adamu that they created lived only 600 years, and they didn't reproduce, and they had a problem. So they created Adam and Eve, who were to be able to reproduce, who were to be immortal. And in my estimation, this wrathful, jealous, angry God has always intended to enslave them to his purpose, whatever that purpose was, and it was nefarious, in my estimation, to have immortal slaves. And Enki came in and did a biological warfare attack on this perfectly formed and immortal being, And the biological warfare attack was having sex with Eve, conceiving Cain, transmitting the serpent seed, and transmitting a serpent virus to Eve, which Adam contracted through sexual intercourse, and he lost his mind. This is where he got sick. He felt shame, and slowly his mortality unfolded. He lost his immortality. And that has to do with attacking the DNA genome that Adam and Eve had that was immortal. So that's the way I see it. And the serpent spawn and the Christic spawn have intermingled. And now all of us are carrying certain quotients, certain proportions of both.
Now, we got even more questions. So let's try to get all these in, Robert, because we do have 20-some minutes left. Dezombified says, what do you think about QAnon?
I enjoy reading QAnon. I don't follow him like an acolyte. I check his sayings every month or 5 weeks. And I like this fellow Leaping Frog. That's the one I watch. I think he's a very intelligent analyst of QAnon. And he correlates it over time. He shows you, well, here, this came true. And he said it back then. He said it again then. So I enjoy the mystery. And a lot of the things that he has said, or he, she, it has said, are intriguing, and many have come true to the hour. So let's see. As I said, you know, I try to make my own mind.
Q does and has said that he will reveal himself at some point, whether it's at the end of Trump's presidency. I don't know when that's, but at least I have heard. Now, here's the next question. Patrick Wheeler asks, oh, and by the way, according to what you just replied to for Dezombified questions, she says same. Now, this comes from Patrick Wheeler to ask you about a false flag of alien invasion. That well, we was have told by Wernher von Braun, as a matter
of
fact.
Yes, yes, yes. I know. I'm very good friends, dear friends, with Dr. Carol Rosen. And I have heard that story directly from her several times. I do believe there is an element to it, but I also believe that there is a real menace and that it has been around. It's not something new. I think the invasion has already occurred, in fact. It started in 1947 and has gone in progressive stages. And I believe that the real invasion is a psychological invasion and an emotional invasion that has turned Americans of these later generations to think and act and feel more like aliens than humans. That, in a nutshell, is what I believe has been the result of the Trojan horse, that I believe Roswell UFO crash was a Trojan horse, that the aliens wanted us to find it. They wanted us to figure out how it worked. They knew they were curious, tinkering species, and that we'd figure out two things. A, how it worked. B, that we were incapable of making such technology unless we retooled our entire industry and retool our society from top to bottom to make us be more like them. Understand?
That absolutely, yes.
In learning how to make and fashion the microchip, we would have to create new industries, train new people, and that training of those people to do those things would create more of a hive mentality and basically more like an insect-like society, with workers, drones, and queen, or well, they call it queen, so it may well be.
Next question can actually somewhat be related when you talked about the technology. Helidium Labs asks about Yellow Book. Can you tell us about Yellow Book? What do you know about it? What are your thoughts on it?
Yes, I know two people who have access to the Yellow Book, and I understand that it's a kind of a holographic book. It's an alien book, and it's a holographic book. And the reader is allowed to read it, but they cannot fall asleep. If you fall asleep and you open the book again, you'll have to go all the way back to the beginning. And what I know about the Yellow Book is that in the opening passages, in the opening chapters, there is a narrative, a monologue. And as the reader goes on, he starts to read about containers. There's constant reference to containers. Chapter one, there's containers. Chapters two, there's containers. We got to chapter three, they realize that the containers that this alien entity was talking about and human bodies. And then I'm told that it goes on to describe their program here on Earth, a genetic engineering hybridization program. And then continue on, if you continue on, it takes you back in a very vivid and holographic 3D way.
I've actually heard it differently, Robert. I've actually heard that what it is a device to let you view the future. And depending on what mood you are, is that it affects your future. So if you're in a very angry mood, and the reason why it's called yellow is because of the tint of the hologram, then whatever mood you are affects your future. And since your future changes every microsecond for what you think, what you do, it also changes. So what you view today may not be what you view later tonight or tomorrow. And allegedly, there is a human version of this, unless the Yellow Book, whoever's at Helidium Labs, maybe you can tell us about this. I believe that Yellow Book was the actual non-terrestrial one. There is supposedly a terrestrial version of Yellow Book that was supposed to have come about this. And if anyone out there can correct this or not, please do. That's what I'm waiting for. That's what I've heard, Robert. Have you heard that story?
I've heard it can go in both directions, but the first part is an educational part that takes you through the history of the universe, the creation of the galaxy, the evolution of the aliens and why they came here, and perhaps that. But I'm just talking from the two Air Force people that gave me the information on it.
Now, Paradox 74-3, does Robert agree with the theory that mankind has been wiped out five times already?
Well, we haven't been totally wiped out or else we wouldn't be here. But I think that there have been several epochs of, well, actually the term is cataclysmic evolution. And if you're interested, I would point you in that direction with that title to the work of Immanuel Velikovsky. Immanuel Velikovsky, the man who wrote Worlds in Collisions and had some very, very interesting theories about the evolution of the solar system and the capture of the planet Venus, and linked it to the Bible as well. So, but he wrote a book called Cataclysmic Evolution, which deals precisely with this subject. So there have been many epochs when almost all life on Earth has been practically wiped out. But I think that whatever was the essence of man was never wiped out, even when we were little, this little mousy. You know, I've seen the smallest mammal fossil ever found, and it's about the size of a person's pinky nail at the American Museum of Natural History. This thing is so small, it's the size of the nail on your pinky. And it was a tree-climbing little thing. It looked kind of a little bit like a koala bear or a lemur. And I thought of this thing running around the primordial jungle floor, running between the toes of dinosaurs, and how it was so small that it could probably survive almost anything. And it probably did, obviously, because we're here and we're descendants of this thing, this creature. So I think that mankind in the different stages that we have passed through was never totally wiped out, but huge segments of it are periodically culled, to use it.
We got a little over 10 minutes left. Dezombified wants to let you know that she got in here late. She's going to watch this again. That's what she also said. And she wants me to tell you that she came in when you were talking about black people's love for Trump, for POTUS. And it's a huge thing, too. I mean, I met a lot of blacks for Trump, and I, you know, they've actually, there's some really great people, and some of the,
hey man,
what they say of why they're Republican, it's very valid. So there's a lot of great videos and a lot of great people to be interviewed. And I recommend people, if you want to learn more about that, is to pay attention to Diamond and Silk. You know, that's they are, I think, some of the biggest proponents of blacks for Trump. Now, this
I want to say something. Can I say something? I want to tip my hat and pay my respects to Kanye West for having the guts.
Yes.
Courage to own up and say that how he feels about Donald Trump. And I think that that is important as an example, because I believe a lot of African Americans are being cowed by the same forces of anti-speech and groupthink. And you shouldn't be afraid to express yourselves, brothers. You know, come out and tell people what you think, regardless of whether you like Trump or not. Don't be afraid to express yourself. This is really important. And many people are being cowed into silence. Remember that saying from the Revolutionary War. Evil succeeds only because good men see and remain silent.
I'm going to get on this question that was asked 12 minutes ago. This is from Alan A. Nakamura. I want to say aloha to Alan. He is the first Patreon patron. So everybody who is not on Patreon, please check it out. Now, question is, was the space defense industry, Boeing, Lockheed, etc., primarily behind the JFK assassination because of the probable UFO/ET disclosure?
Hello, Patrick. Yes, that's a good question, and the answer is affirmative. We have now documents, CIA documents and NASA documents, which prove that President Kennedy was going to reveal the presence of UFOs and alien presence in our reality, and that it was 10 days on November 12th, 1963, he exchanged a long, what we would call a long email, telex in those days, the hotline. The hotline wasn't really voice, it was two telephones that could communicate the way we do faxes. And he exchanged with Premier Khrushchev his concern that UFOs could trip a nuclear war accidentally between us. Because
yes, that's what created the red line.
The dew line.
Red phones, yes.
The hotline, right. That was the Cuban Missile Crisis that led to that. So that really signed his death warrant. And we have found something called the burned memo. I would recommend to everyone who's listening to go to something called majesticdocuments.com and start reading there. You're going to find everything that I'm referring to. Majesticdocuments.com, website run by Dr. Robert Wood and Ryan Wood, his son.
I've interviewed Bob Wood. He's a very fantastic guy. And let me say that Richard Doty has come out and said the contents of the MJ-12 is 100% accurate. Whether those MJ-12 documents themselves are forged or not is still up for debate, but the actual information is dead on, according to him, who was in the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. And
we lost you. Hello? Hello? Testing mic, testing, testing. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Get excited, Whataburger fans. Our one-of-a-kind mushroom Swiss burger is back.
If you love mushrooms, you're going to love this burger.
Two patties, two slices of Swiss cheese, two layers of mushrooms. These mushrooms are beautiful.
It's a really good balance between hearty and savory. That au jus sauce on top.
The creamy au jus sauce. It really sets it apart.
Just adds flavor that makes you go, wow. It is just absolutely amazing.
It's not just a mushroom Swiss burger. It's a Whataburger mushroom Swiss burger. Here for a limited time.
The delicious sound of McDonald's breakfast sausage hitting the grill. Hot and savory sausage that makes any breakfast a great one. And if sausage is the taste you love, you're going to love this savory deal. Because now you can get three tasty breakfast sandwiches for just $1. A sausage McGriddles, sausage McMuffin, or sausage biscuit, now each for just a buck. Hot and tasty, fast and easy. That's breakfast at McDonald's. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.